here. I've been listening to All In off and on this week, and I got to tell you, man, I love the way it's mixed. You know, and I love I love how you guys are heavy but know about melody too. I mean, not a lot of bands can say that.
Well, that's one thing that Paul and I we jive on, because we both love the old school 40s. We love the 50s. We idolize the Beach Boys, to where our main concern is we know that there's nobody around that's going to think of the guitar tracks besides all of Megadeth fans. I mean, the first thing people remember is the melody and how it gets caught in their head. And that's what we try to do. We try to create songs that people can sing first, and then they'll research, oh, well, I guess the guitar playing isn't that bad either. That's my whole goal.
Hey, if it's cool, I'm going to start the interview back with that first question, man.
You know, sure, go for it. You know, because, go for it, dude. That's how easygoing I am.
And here's another cool thing. Your bass playing, I'm serious. You've got your sound down, man. I mean, a lot of bass players in rock, I mean, they all have that same kind of precision bass or jazz bass sound, you know, whether they're a pick player or not. But I mean, your sound is totally signature, man. And I mean, I really got off on it. I mean, and by signature, I mean, it's up there with like Doug Pinnick and Duff McKagan, you know, I mean, it's like they have, you know, or in Paul McCartney, you have your own sound, you know.
That just made me goosebumps, dude. No,
but I mean, I'm serious. Well, see, I'm a guitarist, so I mean, I listen for stuff like that.
That could lead into a whole other conversation too, because the way that I learned how to play bass was like Matt Freeman. When I broke my neck, my friend introduced me to The Who, and so that introduced this whole love of John Entwistle. The first CD she ever bought for me was The Who Live at Leeds. And back in the day, I could pan stuff all the way to the left, and I could hear everything that John was playing. And I was like, fuck, I want to be able to play like that. I mean, my generation, I mean, that was like the first real big bass solo I wanted to try and learn. So from then on, it's always been, okay, I gotta find my sound. How can the person that created rock bass, how can I one-up him there? And apparently the only way to do it is if I light my bass on fire and my tone is signature now. That's the only way I can do it.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I actually thought of this last night when I was listening to All In. Mm-hmm. You have a low end sound that cuts through the mix perfectly, but it also has that high tone definition. And another bass player that I was thinking of that reminded me of was actually on this show a year and a half ago, and that was Billy Sheehan.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. When he was, I got to ask him, were you doing what he does? He splits his signal and he goes to two different amps that are mixed totally separate. He has one pickup go to one amp and another go to the other.
Yeah. No, I didn't do that. Even though fucking Bailey Sheehan, Jesus Christ, that guy can solo like a motherfucker. We actually did have a bass that was made by ESP. I forgot what it was called, but it was kind of like the Billy Sheehan style, to where it had a P bass pickup on one side, and then it had a Music Man gigantic block on the other end. Yeah, and we plugged both in. And I brought the one bass that I've recorded with on every single album, and every single time, it's been the winner. So we tried the ESP bass, and our producer swore by it, said there's no way that anything else can come around to this. I'm like, okay. We tried it. It didn't work. I plugged in my P bass that, like I said, I lit on fire. And once again, he's just like, that's the one. I don't know what it is about that bass. It's literally my Frankenstein, because it has a 92 neck, a 2002 body, and the pickups, I mean, like, I bought them, shoot, maybe 2002 as well. But yeah, it's my Frankenstein bass, and that's the one that always cuts through. And with Ryan Green, he finds the one thing about you that makes you, and he bastardizes it. He makes sure, like, that's what we're going to do. We're going to have you go here. We're going to have you hit the lows and the highs at the exact same time. the whole bass is in one track. It was just a lot of fucking finger stretching and a lot of practice.
Wow. Wow. Now, what are you using for amplification? Are you using like 410s and a 118 or what?
Nope. For that, literally, it was the only preamp I had set up on there was my fans amp, my plug-in DI. And then we were going to run through an 810, but it was just perfect. And I'd be like, I don't want to fuck with it. We dialed in the tones to where I have it now. And the only big difference about it is it's he turned the presence up. Everything else is flat. Everything is up at noon.
Oh, wow. Oh, nice. So you're not like cutting the mids or boosting or having a bright switch on anywhere or anything? Or?
Nope. The only switch that I have on that bass is an active and a passive, and while recording it was passive.
Oh, wow. See, I would have thought you were using like a set of EMGs or something, like a PJ setup,
actually. No, baseline quarter pickups.
Oh, wow, nice. Now, does the band as a whole, Static Fiction as a whole, particularly with you being a two-guitar band, I've always been in a one-guitar band, but I've been in two-guitar scenarios, and you kind of have to work your tone out with the other guitar player, you know, so it doesn't sound like mud. So, with as much thought as you put into your sound, does the rest of the band as a whole put that much thought into theirs as well, individually?
Holy shit, yes. our lead guitar player, he plays through a fractal unit.
Mm-hmm.
And he dialed in his sound a long time ago, and somehow, some way, with my stands amp going through my Risen 810s and Paul's Risen, where he has four tones, it's basically a full stack. It just somehow all gels. Like I didn't have to do anything with my tone. Once again, it's all flat. Nice. And they just kind of go off that. And we never had to go, oh, can you turn this here? Can you turn that there?
Mm-hmm.
It's always been, hey, let's just see how it sounds. And we didn't do anything.
And Risens are like one of the most one of the most under-recognized amp companies in the world, I think. That and Soldano, for tone.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I've always, like, if I had the money, I'd get a Risen or a Soldano. You know?
The cool thing about our Risen stuff is that we met Bob Rizzi 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And he wanted us to be directly under him, to where we're just going to use all Risen gear. So every time I've been on tour with the band, I've had my Risen gear out. And everybody's kind of going, what the fuck is with that? Like, mm-hmm. I've never seen that before. It's like, dude, go back in the 80s. Go check out, like, the crew at US, at S92. Go check out old school GNR.
Yeah, everybody thinks it's a new company.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, that's the cool thing, too, about this, is that he said he's making, because he had all this old school, like, brand new stuff in the 70s still in boxes in factories.
Oh, nice.
And so he just said, hey, so I'm going to make you brand new vintage gear. And so he went, fuck to the goddamn yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's like you said, everybody thinks Risen is a new company, but I mean, they've got roots going back to the late 60s even. I mean, I remember seeing tour shots of Elvis Presley and the two guitar players in his band had Risen heads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, they've got a long and valued legacy in history there. So
he was there to help with Dick Dale. He was there to help fix all of his amps whenever he blew those things up. So he took what was working for Dick Dale and then turned it to, you know, some special boutique that only certain players knew about. And the stories that they would tell us, you know, like these big name bands would trade him, you know, their well-known gear, and he would, you know, regaff them and accidentally, you know, cover up old school, you know, like GNR. I can't remember whether you said he did Tom Petty or not, but somebody big, he accidentally just like sold that for, I don't know what, but he says like that's the one thing he wishes he would have kept on. He would have just kept the amps instead of just turning it around, selling them, and getting more parts to make more amps.
Nice. I mean, so it's modern vintage, basically.
Exactly.
Wow. So let me ask you about All In. What was it like working with Ryan Green?
That man could scare fucking anybody with his laugh. You couldn't tell whether he was being serious or not because, I don't know, it was just kind of like, what's the best way to put it? He's like you got in trouble in Sunday school, but you weren't sure whether you were going to get the rapey priest or the one that would just, you know, hit you with a ruler. It was kind of like, fuck, like, did I do something wrong? Did I do something wrong? Oh, shit. Like, when our guitar player showed up, when we started doing scratch tracks, he saw a couple of guitars, and he's never met Ryan Green before. He picked up a guitar, and him and I were talking, and he's like, hey, hold on. Your fucking hands better be fucking clean, because I'm not fucking paying for those fucking guitars to be redone because your fucking fingers are dirty.
Oh,
and then goes
God.
Back to talking, and he stares him going, what the fuck just happened? I was like, wait, what? He's our guitar player. Yeah, his hands better not be fucking dirty. I'm not paying for new strings or all that shit to be redone. I said, no, please tell me you wash your hands before you came in. He's like, I put Purell. I was like, okay, he put Purell.
There's
no germs on there. They're good.
Oh, my God. Putting the Gorilla Snot on and everything to protect the strings. And
exactly. It was. Wow. It was cool because, I mean, he is, I guess I'm OCD when it comes to chords, pedals, guitars. I mean, just from being on tour so much, you have to know where everything is, and you have to make sure that it'll be ready to go at the next stop. And there's always one person there, usually Murphy, to show up to fuck everything up. And if it's in your power to stop it, you will do anything and everything to stop it.
Man, exactly. So what was the recording process like then?
Recording process was pretty the same as the first time. It was, we showed up, we did a scratch track. Actually, no, beforehand, when we were writing all the songs, we would send him not stuff that we cut on Pro Tools or Logic. We had to play the song in a room. We would set up a mic, and we would do one live recording of the song. And then he would go, okay, we'll change this here, change this there, and then give it back to me. That happened for about a month before he says, okay, these songs are ready, come on in. And we played the songs through, and he says, okay, let's record them this way. Sorry, that's bad, but like, and it was brutal. I mean, it was just kind of like, okay, 1, 2, 3, go. And then he would put his little touches on, like, oh, no, don't go here, do it this way, strum like this, strum like that. The one person I felt super bad for is our drummer, Derek, because him being predominantly a drummer, Ryan Green, he was very, very hard on Derek. It was good because it pushed Derek to his breaking point, and then he surpassed that. He was doing a lot of we're used to playing with a click track, and for one of the songs, Something Amazing, it's very swingy, and he was not used to that, and it took him a good few tries to go, I need to learn how to swing on a click. I need to go on the end of not just on the one, just dun 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 da da da. And once again, it was just the magic of Ryan Green going, nope, gotta do it again. Nope, gotta do it again. Like, there's only a couple of times to where he would have to get out of the booth and show him. Derek was definitely dead on as far as, okay, you want me to do this here, we'll do this there. They talked perfect drum language to one another. And that's why I think the drums were so big and so much better than our first album.
And drum...
You can see it.
Oh, and I was just going to say, drummers kind of get the brunt of it anyway in the studio because they're the heart of the music.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They take more abuse than the spot in between the girls' twat and butthole. That thing is beating enough. And drummers, they just, it's just straight up. I truly feel bad for them. I've only worked with one producer that was predominantly a bassist. I can't say his name, but I did tell him to go fuck himself. And,
oh, wow.
it was bad. What's the best way to kind of hint who he was? Yo, dog, you ain't all that is the best way without getting sued by him. But he told me
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, that fucking guy. I mean, because I played my action so low and I played my bass so low, he made an example of me, and I am happy to say I got up, told him to go fuck himself, and walked out of the studio.
Now, was he giving you constructive criticism, or was he just being a dick?
Oh no, he went well past constructive criticism. I mean, he was pointing out I was what a bass player should not be, is what he was trying to put at. I'm like, nothing about the way I play is right. Nothing, absolutely nothing.
That sounds all like right. He just had a chip on his shoulder that day, actually. You know, because, there's no point in attacking anybody like that. That's almost, you do it just because you like fucking with people, you know?
Maybe because I had a fucking Arctic white Gibson Thunderbird bass. And everybody else was playing Fenders. I don't know why, but it was just straight up, he singled me out, and he just went to town on me. So
nobody's a brand loyalist nowadays, man.
Yeah. You know? Well, exactly, especially because he's all music, man. Oh, wait, no, I can't say anything more about him because people might do their research, and I might get a letter here the next
time. Yeah, that's like three Google searches now before you find out who that is. So, okay, music man, yo dog, you know. But well, how did the songs progress in the studio? I mean, you know, because one thing that always interests me, like between the writing process and the recording process and the mixing and mastering, so a lot of times the songs sound different than they were originally intended. Is that the case with you guys?
Kind of, because we already had most of the five songs, or excuse me, we had most of the six songs written already. And Derek and Noah kind of came in 3 or 4 months before we went to the studio. And so with them being more of a metal kind of background, which is, like I said, is awesome. I love black metal. I mean, it's something really, really cool, and the way that they play just completely opened it up. I loved the fact that I could tell Noah, can you please do a guitar squeal up here, and can you please do triplets here? Oh yeah, no worries. Let's go, wow! So that's why I think Main Street went from okay to great, is because of those two people. They were able to bring the metal in, the more aggressive stuff, while, you know, Paul's still singing about going down on PCH. And not going down on a girl. I don't know.
Nice, nice. Now, if you could take one song off of the album or the EP and, you know, the rest you had to throw in a fire personally, which would your favorite be?
Fuck.
It's a hard question, isn't it?
Yeah. Would you prefer, I'll tenacious D you, would you rather fuck her hard or fuck her gently?
Gently at first.
Something amazing.
Okay. Now, why is that?
It starts out with the ukulele, and that's the song that Paul was very, very, very stubborn about, to where we have to have harmonies. We have to have climbing woes and na-nas there. And it's all just straight up like this, that is a love song. that song, when I wrote the music for it, I was heavily in love. And that's where it kind of came out to me. And Paul took it over and really created, I guess you can say, a beautiful song.
And honestly, that song sounds like it was the hardest to write.
Nope. I wrote that original riff when I was in a different band, and our manager at the time told us that we needed to stop writing such complicated songs and just write easier songs. So that's exactly what I did. The whole song is basically B to E to F sharp. It's just those are the three main chords. You can say that they're Blink-182 chords. They're the most pop chords I could think of, and it literally was so simple to write the music. Lyrics, I mean, that's all Paul's territory, but as far as music goes, it was just kind of like, okay, this is where you can just like feel where the song or where the parts need to go.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, it does have that vibe to it. But like we were talking about earlier, the harmonies and the intro and everything too. It kind of felt like that song had to be thought out. If that makes any sense, like it was like. You know, like you guys were there, like, okay, let's see what else we could do with it.
Originally, the chorus line was something completely different when we first started really putting effort into the song. It used to be something to where you'd get the girl and that was it. Paul decided that he didn't really like the way that it was going and took it upon himself to where he said, just email me the tracks. I'm going to sit down for a couple of days and I'm going to rewrite everything. And he did. He sat down and he came back to the studio with a melody line and lyrics that I could never even, I couldn't think of on my best day. He really pulled through and made that song really something amazing. No pun intended.
No, I mean, and it shows too, you know, because it has that feeling that, like I said, that it took effort to piece that together, you know, yeah. and it's a lot more. It actually gives the illusion that it's more complex than it is, you know, not just the lyrics or anything, but even the chord progression. You know, it feels like it was thought out, which is a good thing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really, really thought out by Paul.
So now let me ask you this: with you being an indie band, if like Warner Brothers or Virgin or something came up to you and said, "Yeah, we want to sign you guys to our standard, new label artist deal," you know, would you take it or would you continue to be indie?
The only way, me personally, that I would take it is if I could say they cannot appoint a producer or a songwriter with us unless Ryan Green is involved. Because I do sincerely believe that Ryan Green is the fifth member of the band.
I was actually thinking that when you said that.
Yeah, no, he's the one that like I said, like it's just something that fucking ginger just knows. He knows where the song needs to be. And the fact that he did produce every single Fat record. I mean, I'm a big Lagwagon, no use for a name fan. And the fact that I could talk to him about stuff, the fact that he could show me, oh yeah, this is a head that has been on every single album. You know, this song or this guitar was on Linoleum. It's like, holy shit, all the stuff that he has punk rock roots with, and it could be the mojo through there. It could be the fact that, you know, when I do talk to him, I feel like I am my old little high school getting all geekified by, oh my god, you got to record with Fat Mike, oh my god, what was El Jefe like, oh my god, you got to talk to Tony Sly. You know, it's just something like, he's the guy. He is the reason why Static Fiction is Static Fiction.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it sounds like, I mean, he's got a lot of influence, and he's more than just a producer in a way. In a way, it sounds like he's a mentor.
Oh, he totally mentors us. Like I said, it's like there's times to where you feel like he's your best friend, but then at the turn of a dime, you know, he could make you go cut a whip and go, okay, you did this wrong, now you're going to fucking pay for it. So will you ever do that again? No, I won't. Okay.
In a way, though, isn't that a true mentor? I mean, because like whenever I see, you know, somebody do stuff like that or act like that, you know, kind of that back and forth, I think of Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like he's congratulating you on the brownies you made 1 minute, and then the next minute he's telling you to fuck off out of the kitchen because you screwed up the risotto. You know, so.
And the thing about Gordon Ramsay is that he has turned into one of the best internet memes around. Like, why did a chicken cross road? Because it's undercooked. You know, just all these, like, funny little jokes that people are coming up with. Or this fish is still undercooked. It's still trying to find its son. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Well, but let me ask you this. Would you consider Ryan Green kind of like Gordon Ramsay then? Because it sounds like he sounds like he's kind of, they're kind of the same type, like type of personality.
Oh yeah, no, he is a total Gordon Ramsay. He like I said, he you're dead on. He'll whoop your ass, but he'll give you cotton candy while you're doing it to show you that you're doing a great job. He is like Gordon Ramsay.
Nice. Now, where do you think Static Fiction is headed musically? Because you've got a solid EP with All In. I mean, it's you know, six tracks of just brutal melody, and I don't know how else to say it. I mean, it's you know, it's deep, it's bassy, it's catchy, you know, and I mean, you could sing to it. I mean, you could sing along with it. I mean, I would call it a travel disc. You know, like something you could just put in the stereo, you know, if you're going across the country or something.
That's all that I really want. I've always wanted to be in a band or write an album or write a song to where people can actually listen from the beginning to end without having to skip any parts. There's very few CDs that I can actually say I can listen from first to last, and that's it. That's all I want. That's all I think any musician wants. We understand that sometimes we have to have, you know, filler songs if we ever need to make a full length album, but I don't want to cut short of that. I want to exceed that. I want people to be able to go, oh, you know, oh, we're going to Vegas this weekend. It's going to be 5 hours. Well, let's listen to that Static Fiction shit. You know, they'll get us all the way to Barstow, then we can go from there.
But that's kind of a, you know, think about it. That's kind of like, what you were talking about there about a filler song, that's kind of like what a label would tell you to do too, though. Like, oh, well, this album needs to be 72 minutes, you know, and you guys are at 68, you know?
All I need to say is they said that exact same thing, I think, to Warrant, and then they came out with Cherry Pie.
True. Yeah, that's true. That's true, and then that's what they're known for.
Yeah, God, the interviews of their lead singer going, if I ever have to play that song again, I swear to God. Which is, I mean, you can say that about like almost every single Smash Mouth song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, or Sum 41. I might, if you remember them. You know, they were kind of like that. Green Day, obviously. You know, I mean, they're kind of like every song, you know, is basically an anthem at this point, you know. But do you think every song needs to be?
No, I mean, it doesn't need to be deep, but it needs to be able to connect to at least somebody out there. You know, like Main Street and Something Amazing. That was all written about going to the beach. Keep It Moving. That song was written about our lead singer's wife, to where, you know, it's, I want to call it a love-hate relationship because they love each other, but the fact that it talks about, you know, the highs and lows of everybody's relationship. Somebody out there can relate to that. And what is it? Temporary. I mean, that's like a Weezer song. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. But, well, going back to keep it moving, do you think it's hard to maintain a relationship when you're in a touring band?
Oh, my God, yes.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you've got the time apart and all the girls and stuff, too.
Okay, there's three kinds of people that go on tour. You have the people that want to go out and get laid every single night. You have the people that, you know, they keep themselves so busy to where they can't think about anything else. And then you have the person that just wants to go out there and have fun and live like a frat life. Now, the hardest thing about a relationship is that there's certain amount of trust to where, I mean, I'll just come out with it. I mean, I was cheated on when I was on the road. That's not really heard of very often, but that's exactly what happened. I learned that, you know, it's not just the musicians that cheat. It's the people that we leave at home that cheat.
Yeah, and it comes down to the type of person, you know, I mean, that you are personally, possibly, I think.
Yeah. You see the person's true colors, especially on with your band. You never know the person until you're with them on tour. I love certain people off the road, but as soon as we're on the road, I cannot wait to stop playing with them and just go to my other corner and just like never have to talk to them again.
Yep, exactly. And you know what? I mean, like I said, man, when I was in a band and when I was doing all that stuff, like, I never cheated, and even when I was, like, single, I never messed with anybody, because I was always afraid, because my luck is shit, you know, and I was always afraid I was going to get that one girl that had that one-off strain of HIV that nobody's ever heard of, you know, so.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I personally feel that I could be patient zero in, like, a rare disease called CAIDS, where it's, like, cancer and AIDS, or technically you can live off, because I've toured with the band The Maxes before, and I mean, we're drinking, fighting, all that fun stuff, and one thing that I always like to tell the fans is that, like, you'll never get an STD if you never get tested, so just go out there and have fun. I do not preach it, and I do not support it, but I also try and tell them that if they listen to a Maxi song, you'll automatically get laid, whether it's with yourself or with your right hand. Either way, you're getting laid tonight if you buy this album.
Nice. And yeah, being on tour a lot, man, I mean, you've got to have some Spinal Tap moments, man.
I did. I was, oh, where the hell was I? Oh, Christ. I think I was in Montana, to where it was, what the fuck venue was it? It was a split venue. And on one side, it was the smaller stage, and on the other side, it was the bigger stage. Well, I've been drinking and consuming that night, to where everybody went off to go to the big stage. Well, I thought we were in the little stage, so I hear cheering and scranting, and I'm booking it down there, and I open up the door, and there's nobody there. Just a couple of people, just, and I'm going, what the fuck did I get? I'm on LSD. Like, I'm going, what the fuck's going on? I'm just like looking, and I'm going, I can hear people chanting, and I can hear the drums warming up. I'm going, where the fuck am I? And I'm just kind of like, I'm yelling like a little kid caught, like, that got lost in a supermarket. I'm going, where am I? Fucking somebody help. And finally somebody goes like, what the fuck are you doing here? And leads me to the big stage. I'm going, okay, hi guys. Hello, everybody. Yeah.
Nice.
If you see a drink fizzing, don't drink it, because apparently you'll get lost.
Nice.
I went down I went down the wrong rabbit hole. I'm sorry, guys.
That's awesome, man. So, I mean, speaking of live, man, what is a static fiction show like? I mean, are you guys, like, at the end of the night, you guys, like, dripping in panties and everybody's yelling and stuff, or what?
No, me personally, I run around a lot, and I try and jump around as much as possible. He is singing to the crowd, and he's always very, very thankful and very gracious to everybody that comes to his show, because nowadays it's really hard, especially if you're just a local band, to bring people to shows, because they can just look you up on YouTube, and you have to figure out a way, how can people want to come to a Static Fiction show? Well, how we get people to come to a Static Fiction show is that we will give them a night to remember. There was an old, I used to be in a band with somebody to where she used to say every single night, you know, we may not be the headlining band, but you will remember us every single night. And that's what I try and live by. You may not know who I am, but by the end of the night, you will remember the band that I play in. Whether it's with the music, or whether I'm jumping around, or the fact that I get $86 for chucking my bass into the crowd. You're going to remember Static Fiction somehow.
And that's very important in this day and age with YouTube, Facebook, and SoundCloud, and Twitter, and all that stuff, because, you know, with the internet, I mean, the music is so readily available. There's all these outlets, and it's easy to get, you know, to not get heard and to end up in the white noise area.
Exactly. I mean, there's everybody and everyone that... anybody can make a record on GarageBand. Anybody can press play. It's really finding the musicians that can go out there and, you know, play what they preach. You know, can they write this song? Can they sing this song? Do they have to use autocorrect? Do they have to do this? You know, do they have to... They have to show them, hey, this is actually me on tape. This is me performing it. This is me putting my heart and soul out there.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you this, because you bring up a good point. See, I hear a lot of bands. I mean, I hear at least, like literally not bullshitting, like 40 to 60 bands a day. And that's only because I go off and do other stuff like eat and breathe and all that, you know. But I mean,
get the fuck out of town. I eat and breathe too.
No, but what I'm getting at is like, you know, they're, you know, like. And this goes back to what I was telling you earlier about complimenting you on your songwriting style, drive, and even you know, taking into account, you know, like your tone of your instruments and your overall sound. I don't think a lot of bands do that anymore. You know, I think we live in that garage band mentality where it's like, okay, I'll start, you know, like they start recording at 9, they're done by 10, and then they spend the rest of their lives bragging about it.
The best way to put it is that you have real musicians that they want to hone their skill. You know, when I talk to fans, when I'm out there, they ask me, you know, like, you know, what do you do all day? Like, well, I get a cup of coffee and I get my bass and I start doing my scales. And they go, really? It's like, yeah. And then, you know, an hour, 2 hours will go by because I'm doing my scales. I'm writing songs here. You know, just like how kids love playing video games, they can play video games all day long and time will go by like that. That's exactly how I feel about playing music, how I feel about playing guitar. I am constantly trying to surpass what I can do. I am never happy with where I am play-wise, because I feel like I can be so much better.
Not just as part of a unit, but as an individual musician as well.
Exactly. I want, with my band members, the one thing that we press upon is that, you know, we're just like soldiers out there, to where I have to depend that you're going to know what to play, when to play, and how to play it every night I go out. Just the way that they rely on me to do the exact same thing. If you settle with something, you're always either going to be that or you're going to be less. If you always try and surpass it, then your worst nights, you know, is you on the records. That's it. And no, that's really it.
Oh, I was just gonna say, and that should be the attitude from cradle to the grave when it comes to music, and when it comes to any project or brand you're trying to create.
Exactly. You have a product that you want people to go see. I mean, I don't want to be like Gene Simmons, where I want to be known as Coke. I'd be okay being Dazzled Fashion Root Beer. Everybody knows about it, and there's a certain kind of people that will always want to enjoy it. But, you know, I don't want to be the biggest name person out there. I just want to be a person that people know, hey, that's a good bass player. That's really it. Or, hey, he's a great songwriter. You know, if I pop up on Bands in Town, you know, Static Pictures Beer, oh, I remember them. They were good. I'll go check them out.
Yeah, honestly, you know, I think Gene Simmons is more of a good salesman than a good bass player. I mean, he's basically created a brand that just happens to be a band. They come out with all this, you know, everything new except a new album, you know?
Everything new but a new album, yeah.
You know, but, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, you know, I like what you guys are doing, and it shows, because you guys are like, focused on the prize. I mean, it's a very straight and narrow road for your abilities and your music, and that's good because you're focused.
Yeah, I mean, we're never ever going to be as good as Blink-182, or we're never going to be as good as Green Day. But whenever they come into town, people show up and go, oh, okay, these guys are coming in. Like I said, it's really hard to get people to go, you know, because there's, as far as pop punk bands go, we're a dime a dozen.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing, though. I think you could be as good as Blink-182 or good as Green Day, because here's the thing. In the late 80s, those guys were saying, I wish we could be as good as the Sex Pistols, or I wish we could be as good as the Ramones. You know, and then they got as good, and you're on the cusp of being as good as them. It's all, you know, that's the cool thing about this style of music, is it can always move forward, and it can always be paid forward.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, and it comes down to the fact that you guys, you know, are workaholics, and you do have your eye on the prize. Let me ask you this. We had a guest on the show last week who is probably one of the most trained musicians I've ever talked to, and his name's Michelangelo Baddio.
And yeah.
Well, it's on the mat. It's on jammerzine.com if you want to hear it. But I asked him this.
Oh, you're right. I'm going to listen to it.
I asked him this question, and based on what we've talked about, I need to ask this to you. You know, he talks about he has a music degree. You know, he could teach if you know, for some weird reason his music career went south. He could go to a college and teach it. You know. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. One of his favorite guitarists is Eddie Van Halen, who never had a lesson in his life. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Totally self-taught. So my question to you is, do you think one is better than the other? Because here's the thing, you know, like what he said is, yes, he was, you know, Eddie's self-taught, and he has a formal education, but they both worked equally as hard. You know, so do you think it's the drive that's important, or do you think it's the education?
That's completely how I feel. I feel like you only get as much as you put in. I have two degrees. I have a degree in geology, focusing on earthquakes and petroleum. And then I went to MI, and I got my bass player's degree. And my personal hero is, as far as the person that I've always wanted to, you know, play as, if I had to single one person out, is Fat Mike from NoFX. And that fucker, same thing. I have a music degree. I could go teach if I wanted to, but I'm not going to, because I'd much rather play live. You know, he worked super hard. The fact that he was able to create, you know, a punk rock empire just off, you know, signing bands that he was friends with. that's something that I want. He has his own special way of playing bass, the same way that you say that I have my own mm-hmm. special way of playing bass.
And it shows, too.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even tell you how many times, I mean, every musician has done this to where they dream of the chance where they can play in front of 20,000 people, or they go see their favorite band play and the bass player fucked up. Okay, well, you know, who in the audience can play bass, blah, 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 blah. And I think I've only known one band that does that. The Who, when fucking Keith Richards passed out on the drum set and they picked the kid off their crowd and they played three songs with them.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's actually on YouTube still.
Yeah. And actually, I toured with a Real Big Fish one time, and we were in El Paso, Texas, and there was a girl holding up a sign going, you know, let me play beer. And what did they do? They brought her up on stage, and she played it with the entire band. Hit every single note. Now, she is going to remember that for the rest of her life. She's going to go take that and start a band, and now she wants to pass that whole thing along to where she wants the kid to go, can I play this song with you? And, of course, she's going to go, okay, that's all I want. I want people to hear my music, get inspired to do it, and maybe even come play with me. Non-sexual. Okay, maybe sexual, depending on how hot you are.
Well, do you think that it all comes down to drive then? Because, you know, another example I'm thinking of is Paul McCartney. Paul McCartney can't even read music, and he's written operas.
It's all drive. I took an MI. They have a Paul McCartney class to where they teach you a bunch of Beatles songs, and I can't tell you how many times I got confused just the way that he walks the bass on the Sgt. Pepper songs. I mean, Yellow Submarine, I was kind of going, wait, he plays that? Like, this is, what?
Do you think
he put these notes together and he didn't know what the fuck he was doing the entire time?
Do you think maybe he does that because he has no training, so he just does what he thinks sounds good, maybe?
Everybody has a little musical soul in them. Everybody can tell whether something sounds good or something isn't. Not everybody is tone deaf. They can tell, oh, maybe this sounds good here, this sounds good there. I mean, how long were the Beatles in studios just cranking out song after song after song after song after song?
Yeah, exactly. I remember my nephew, he's six now, but when he was four, playing with a piano that, you know, is in the family, and he figured out fifths and thirds without knowing it.
Fuck.
Yeah, I mean, he figured out what a root and a third and a fifth were. I mean, I mean, he didn't know what the terminology was, but, you know, but he figured it out. So, and the funny thing was, like an hour later, I see him doing major and minor within the fifth, within the root fifth and the third.
Really?
Yeah. It's because, he has no idea what those terms mean. He's just doing it by ear. So, I mean, maybe to an extent, we're all musical. We just don't know it or don't give ourselves credit for it.
Everybody sings in the shower. Everybody sings it in their car. Everybody gets drunk and sings karaoke. It just, whether you want to accept it and you want to excel at it or not. It's like we all are born to breathe. We're all born to walk. Yet we all can't hold our breath for that long, and we all can't be track stars. If we take what we want and we love, we hone our skills, that's when we can excel at it.
Exactly. Now, do you think maybe it's when we get a guitar or a bass or a keyboard or something, it looks daunting because of the fretboard or the keys? Or something like, you know, or whatever, you know, it looks intimidating.
That quite possibly could be it too, to where, I mean, I've had, I don't know how many friends have picked up the guitar going, how the hell do you play this? And I'm just going to put it this way. I mean, and this may be dirty as hell, but you don't look at your penis if it's gigantic and you're afraid of it. You just learn to handle it, and then you learn how to work it. That's how a guitar is.
That's how any instrument is, if you think about it. You know,
it is. I mean, like, if you're afraid of it, then you're afraid of it, and you'll never be happy. Literally, you will never be happy. So, you can't be afraid. You just got to learn how to grip it and rip it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like I got a friend of mine that says, well, I don't know how to play the saxophone because I thought I never could. You know? So, I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, anything can be learned if you spend time at it.
Exactly. You don't just give up after the first try. You give up after a month or two of going, God damn it, I do suck. Okay, maybe you're not meant to play the saxophone. Let's try the trumpet this time.
Exactly. So that, and you know,
three vowels instead of 20.
And you know what? I get this might sound, you know, a little off key or left to center, but I get that feeling. You know, from talking to you and listening to, you know, All In, that you guys have that attitude, like all four of you do, you know, and well, Ryan Green, obviously, but all four of, you know, the center band members.
Yeah, no, we take pride into whether we're singing or our guitar playing, because if not, then what's the point? If you don't love what you do, then what are you doing? If I didn't want to be a bass player, I wouldn't have been a bass player. But I love playing bass. I love playing bass. And I love, like I said, just push myself to where I can play even better than anybody else. I will never be that great, because there's always somebody better than you, and I always have to try and exceed them.
Yeah, and there always is somebody better. I heard a YouTube interview with Steve Vai that said that he knows people that can beat the shit out of him on guitar.
Oh yeah,
you know, which I find hard to believe, but I mean it's true. You know, it has to be true because he said it. You know, I mean, you know, but what really makes somebody the best? I mean, like, here's the thing, like, you know, I come from the, you know, the Yngwie, Eddie, you know, Lynch school of guitar. So that's my style. You know, I'm a shredder by default, but I mean, I will give Stone Gossard and Kurt Cobain their props because they're brilliant. You know?
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, they're brilliant at what they do. They honed what they're good at. You know, and they taking what some people might consider a weakness and made it not only a positive, but part of the signature riff. So, you know, that's all you can ask for, and that's what makes a genius. And to be honest, I see that in a lot of the chord progressions, and you know, and in a lot of the harmonies that you guys have on, you know, Main Street, Keep It Moving, Temporary, you know, AMRA, Till the End, you know, all that. I mean, there's that each song on that album has a bit of that.
Thank you so much. I was thinking of a story to where, like you said, Steve Vai saying that there's other guitar players that can actually beat him. I'm trying to remember the name of the book, but it's The Bassist of Ozzy. He wrote a book about Randy Rhoads, and he said this kid showed up in before soundcheck, and he asked him, you know, hey, can you play this solo? And Randy's like, oh shit, I haven't played that in forever. And he tried to play it, and the kid says, no, that's not how you play. This is how you play. He goes, and he goes, holy shit, if a kid can do that, then what am I doing? That's the kick in the pants where, you know, you're not always going to be the best. You always have to outdo yourself. I guess that's the way that I live. I can't be happy with where I am now. You call it work ethic, call it whatever you want to be, but it's just, you can't ever settle.
Well, but here's the thing, too. There's kind of a flip side to that, because when I interviewed Billy Sheehan, and there's the funny thing. It was the only time I've ever interviewed somebody in person, So we were at the venue in the green room with his brand new, you know, Yamaha SIG, you know, the version 3 with the, you know, the extra screw in the neck and everything. And, you know, he was showing it to me and stuff. And I asked him, what's it feel like to be a virtuoso? And he's like, I don't know. I'll let you know if I find out. You know, and he's like, and what he said is that he's not a virtuoso, but he got to a point, and I think you'll hit this. I don't think you're there yet because you're young, but I think you're on the road to this. He said that he learned that that he's a fan of his own style and he's comfortable with himself, and that became liberating.
That's total Pete Townsend. Pete Townsend was the number one Who fan, and he wrote songs as if a Who fan would write those songs. I like that because I do like pop punk style. I love listening to pop punk music. I love listening to brand new bands that are coming out, and I like to see, you know, where they got their inspiration from. You know, why do they play this? You know, why do I play that? Why am I trying to incorporate finger tapping in pop punk? Well, because I think it might sound cool. It could be something brand new. It could be great. It could suck. I don't know, but I'll give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's coming to the point now where, like, it's not so much taking it in a new direction, but just taking it in all directions, because all directions have been traveled.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing brand making new out there. If they discover it, I'll be the first person to admit that I was wrong, but everything that has been done has been done. Every song that can be written has been written. It's just, how can you put your own personal spin on it?
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like, I saw that Smithsonian Institute interview with Eddie Van Halen where somebody asked him in the audience, like, how did you invent tapping or finger tapping? He's like, how did I invent finger tapping? I saw Jimmy Page do it. So, you know, that tells you that goes right along with what you're saying. I mean, everything's been done.
That is hilarious, and that guy probably felt so small after he asked that.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. It was like, and he did it in his raspy Eddie voice. It was like, yeah, how did I learn to finger tap, or how did I invent finger tapping? I watched Jimmy Page do it once. Stole it. So...
and actually admitting that, yeah, I saw somebody do it, and that's it. Like that's so cool, and that's so rad, because there has been people saying that, oh no, I'm the one that created the dive bomb. No, you didn't. The only person that actually can take something in metal roots is Ronnie James Dio. He's the one that really took the horns and brought it to metal. That's it.
Yep. So, I mean, so the only recourse we have nowadays from now until eternity is to just take it in more directions than you can think of.
Exactly. Music is a tree, and there's always branches growing from something.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And just, you know, all you have to do is just study the roots and everything above it.
Exactly. Study your roots, study your rudimentals, and just go off that and see if there's something you can create. Everybody can create a song, even if it's something in out of tune. Everybody can create. Everybody can sing. Everybody can do anything that they want to be, whether they can do it or not. It's up to them.
Mm-hmm. So what is Static Fiction have coming up, man? What are you guys going to be doing for the rest of the year?
We have the All In EP going to be available on iTunes on 8th of May. So we got that. We have a show coming up this Saturday. We have a show on the 5th, and then we have a show on the 19th. And then we're going to do a few dates when the U.S. Open comes out to Huntington Beach, and hopefully this time we won't cause a riot.
Now, you guys caused a riot before?
We played the U.S. Open, and then the very next day, the riot happened. Yeah, and we went, fuck, did we suck that bad?
So, man, I was thinking, I was like, oh, God, please don't tell me this was an Axl Rose moment.
Oh, no. We didn't, no. It's a bunch of, of idiot people taking advantage of a small town. I call Huntington Beach a small town because we are a small community. We love one another, and we really, yeah. But that's going to politics. I don't even want to talk about that.
Nice,
so, yeah.
Nice. Well, where can we find Static Fiction online?
Shit, you can find it at our launch page, staticfictionhb.com. Facebook, Static Fiction HB, Twitter, Static Fiction HB. Pretty much any kind of social media network is Static Fiction HB, where all of our songs are on Reverb Nation, are on SoundCloud, or on iTunes, or on Spotify, we're on Amazon, all that fun jazz. What I like, if you would buy the album, fucking awesome, but if you can steal it, more power to you. It's okay. We're not there for the money. We just want you guys to love our songs. And that's it.
Nice. Well, thanks for being on the show today, Ryan, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, dude. I'm glad we were able to talk for fuck me and a half, an hour.
I'm gonna use all this shit, man. It was all good, because I mean, like, fuck it, I mean, it's a magazine and a radio that we both own. You know, so fuck it.
Like I said, no worries, dude. Like I said, I guess the only thing that I can quote is if they ask what Static Fiction is, maybe you can say that we're the most widespreading STD that's out in California right now.
I will definitely say that. I will definitely say that in the intro and in the article itself, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling people. Like, oh, when they ever ask, like, oh, how can you describe Static Fiction? We're the most, you know, wise causing STD out there in California right now. We're very widespreading.
Nice.